Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions. My name is Christopher Cotter, and I'm here with
David Robertson.
And
what have we got this week, Chris?
Well, we've got an interview recorded by Yana Shirley with Francesca Cadedu on Roger Allen Laporte and Catholic martyrdom. So take it away, Yana.
Hello, everybody. This is Yana Scholle from the Religious Studies Project. I'm here with Francesca Cadedu, who is a postdoctoral researcher at the Department of Social and Institutional Sciences at Cagliari in Italy. She's also a fellow researcher at the Foundation for Religious Studies in Bologna, Italy. She wrote her PhD dissertation on the Jesuit priest and theologian John Courtney Murray, an important figure in U.S. Catholicism who featured prominently in the development of the Second Vatican Council's draft on Dignitatis Humanae, the Catholic Church's Declaration on Religious Freedom, a document which has been both a symptom of and an incentive to marked developments in Catholic theology from exclusivism to inclusivism in the 20th century and beyond. At the moment, Francesca is visiting the University of Notre Dame here in South Bend, Indiana, on a research grant from the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism. Her new project focuses on Roger Allen Laporte, who self-immolated as an act of protest against the Vietnam War in 1965. First of all, Francesca, welcome so much to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your new project. Just for the benefit of our listeners, millions of people, most of them civilians, were killed in the Vietnam War, as many of you will know. Almost 58,000 of them were American citizens. And while most of the physical and technical conflict took place overseas, political and ideological conflicts were fought here in the United States and many other places. One of the Americans who died, however, fought by killing himself in front of the United Nations headquarters in New York City. Francesca, could you please tell us about Roger Allen Laporte?
Yes. Roger Allen Laporte was a young boy. He was 22 years old, and he was from upstate New York. He worked part-time at Columbia University, but then we know him as a Catholic worker, so he was part of the Catholic worker movement. That was a movement established by Dorothy Day and Peter Moran in the 30s. And it was focused mainly on taking care of the poor, without asking them anything in return. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had headquarters in New York, Manhattan, but then they progressively expanded all over the city. So Roger worked with them. He would have a shift every day to serve food, cook, distribute clothing, and so on. So yeah, he on the 9th of November 1965, he self-immolated himself in front of the United Nations. He chose to self-immolate at 5 because he was sure that nobody was there to
5 a.m.
Yeah, at 5 a.m., sorry. Yeah, so he wanted to be sure that nobody was prohibiting him to burn himself. And actually, yeah, the reason why he died 2 days later is because when the guard arrived, it was too late to stop the flames. Hmm. I think what's important in this act is that he declared openly that that was a religious act. Mm-hmm. He said, "I did this as a religious act. Mm-hmm. I'm against any war." Mm-hmm. So he was. We know now that he was shocked by the way the pacifist movement was conducting the protests against the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. The draft card burning already started a few months earlier. And as far as I know, he was not, he did not agree with the movement, with this means of protest. We have a few recollections of what it did. What I think it's interesting is to understand what were the reactions mm-hmm. inside the community.
Mm-hmm. And what were they? Maybe we can start by talking about the reception of his protest among the Catholic workers.
Yes.
And then in the Catholic Church in a wider perspective, and then perhaps American media.
Yeah. The Catholic worker movement was completely shocked. They couldn't foresee it. Even if they knew Laporte, they didn't knew him for a long time, but it was totally out of the blue. So they were very shocked, and they didn't really know how to react to it at the very beginning. So they didn't talk with the media for at least 1 or 2 days. Mm. At the end of this period, they decided to read to the press a news release, and they actually they recognized Laporte's act as a religious act, as a strong protest and a kind of like act of communion with the community. But they were very firm in saying that they didn't encourage anybody else to repeat. They were very afraid that the people would copycat his act. Mm. So they took a really long time before, actually 30 days, didn't speak openly until 66. And she brought up this point. Was that a suicide or a sacrifice?
Mm-hmm. But the question is it a suicide or is it a sacrifice?
Yeah. But it remained kind of like in the air, mm-hmm. but people did not talk very much about it. Mm-hmm. The only person that openly spoke about it was Daniel Berrigan. He mm-hmm. was part of the, he was a very active protester.
Okay.
He was a Jesuit. And along with his brother and a few other people of his community, inaugurated the Catholic pacifist movement. We can say so. So he, the funerals of Laporte were celebrated in his hometown, but the Catholic worker movement decided to commemorate mm-hmm. Laporte, to have a moment of reflection mm-hmm. On his death, on his death. So Daniel Berrigan spoke at this commemoration, and there are no records of what he said, but at the end of it, he said that this was an act of martyrdom. For this declaration, along with his involvement into the pacifist movement, the archdiocese mm-hmm. Kind of like censored him, and he was sent to Mexico mm-hmm. As an editor from international mm-hmm. editor. So mm-hmm. he was just sent to Mexico for 2 months, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So in which ways was he censored?
He couldn't. He wasn't able to stay in New York and work mm. with the pacifist movement yeah. for a period of time. Mm. If I remember well, it was 2 months. Mm. And so, he was, they asked, his superiors asked him not to talk anymore about Laporte and not to be involved as he was in mm-hmm. the pacifist movement.
Right.
That was a very, dance moment. The Second Vatican Council was still in session.
Mm-hmm.
In the United States, the debate over the birth control was very was the main topic related to religion at that time, along with the Selma to Washington March, mm-hmm. which just happened mm-hmm. a few months before. So desegregation voting rights, civil rights were, you know, the main topics mm-hmm. going on the media.
Right.
So,
and of course, there were religious trajectories yeah. Developing in that context yeah, too.
Exactly. Yeah. Religious communities were part of the debate on desegregation as well as on birth control, mm-hmm. of course. So, I think that there was the hierarchy might have been afraid, scared by mm-hmm. like all these things popping up,
mm-hmm.
and
because there was so much controversy, so much yes. to handle, basically.
Yes, and yeah. and we can say that the Vietnam War was one of those events that really flagged
mm.
the way Catholics were Americans, like the way they wanted to demonstrate their fellows. Their fellow citizens mm-hmm. that they were American as well.
So how did they do that?
They would be very much patriotic mm-hmm. and on the media as well as on campuses, mm-hmm. university campuses, or
the so they hierarchy. Would support the
yeah,
war?
Very openly.
Wow.
It was a very mainstream
mm-hmm.
mainstream thing. I mean. Mm-hmm. Most of the Americans supported the Vietnam War mm-hmm. until the end of 1965, mm-hmm. 1966. It was very common.
Mm-hmm.
The pacifist movement started in the student, thanks to the student movement. Mm-hmm. But Catholic campuses were not that involved
mm-hmm.
In this movement at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. They started being part of it actually after 1966.
Right.
So LaPorte's death is at the very edge
mm-hmm.
of a new age, mm-hmm. I would say, like where Catholics would speak also against the government without the fear that they were not considered enough Americans.
Right. They're not as afraid of anti-Catholicism yeah. anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That is the point, actually. I think that, yeah, the Council, Vietnam War, Kennedy's election, and yeah, this like from 1960 to 1966, we would mm-hmm. say, mm-hmm. That is the moment where Catholics understand that they don't have any more to be afraid,
mm-hmm.
That people would not consider them Americans mm-hmm. enough, like mm-hmm. in their Americanness
mm-hmm.
wouldn't be contested, discussed.
Right.
So they feel freer mm-hmm. to more free to declare that they don't agree with the government.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that actually happened also with the witches and with McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, we see how the community starts realizing that it's not necessary anymore to go along the majority of the population
mm-hmm.
to be sure that mm-hmm. they won't be considered anti-Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a quite longer process,
mm-hmm.
but we see the effects in the mm-hmm. Vietnam War.
Right. So moving on to then reactions in American media,
mm-hmm.
how was this act of protest received?
Well, this was the third act of protest as self-immolation of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Ali Sertz, a Unitarian woman, already tried to self-immolate, but she didn't die.
Right.
And then a week before Alan LaPorte, Roger Alan LaPorte, Morrison, Robert, I guess.
Robert Morrison
committed, it's very hard, committed mm-hmm. suicide mm-hmm. or he self-immolated
mm-hmm.
in front of the Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the Department of State
mm-hmm.
In Washington D.C.,
mm-hmm.
That was very shocking because he had his daughter with him,
mm-hmm.
and he just gave his daughter to a person like that was walking there,
mm-hmm. a random passerby,
a few minutes before he died.
Wow!
So it was very strong because there was a children involved, and we know that, well, his wife knew that he was very shocked by what was happening, and he really wanted to do something to change the path to the war. But she said she couldn't imagine, of course, that he was going to self-immolate himself. So La Protect is the third in the year. Their reactions were, I would say that it was considered suicide.
Right.
So as a suicide.
Did they use the word suicide explicitly?
They would use gazed, self-burned.
Plus a word.
Yeah, but not immolation.
Right.
They wouldn't say self-immolation. The only person I know spoke openly about self-immolation was Gordon Zahn, a professor at Chicago University, who already studied forms of martyrdom against war.
Right.
And so he knew. Yeah, he could recognize it.
Right.
And so
self-immolation, then using the word self-immolation might imply a stronger connection to martyrdom?
Yes.
Right.
Immolation, you know, it really recalls something that goes beyond just death.
Right.
So I guess.
In what way?
It's very hard. I think it's hard for us now to think how people at that time would perceive such an act.
Right.
Because the counterculture was just starting.
Mm-hmm.
So people were educated in the 40s and 50s, had been educated in the 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. So they had that forma mentis.
Mm-hmm.
And so they their way of thought was
completely different.
Completely different. Yeah. So the categories they used to read what was happening at that time were the categories of their education. So I think what's difficult for scholars now is to really put into the context this kind of acts. So talking about immolation now is very different, and so it's very hard to put yourself into the mid 60s and reason as you were a mid-age person, like 25 to 30, and what do you think about a person that burns himself as a religious act?
In
protest of a war that most of your community support. So and at that time psychology and psychiatry were just developing the conception of conscience. That was very new, and probably they didn't have really the categories to understand it.
So in what ways did this new focus on conscience add to the discussion and change the discussion?
We know that from the 40s, the idea of conscience in Catholicism was kind of like integrating, or I would say unconsciously integrating elements of psychiatry and psychology. So the way the individual would reason about what it did, his sins, or you know, his act, was changing. And there was kind of like wider space for allowing yourself to do something that before that moment was considered as a sin, like sin period. And then it was kind of like people felt that they could widen that concept.
Right.
Not the conscience.
The conscience. Yeah.
So this was self-immolation is an act of conscience. I mean, you don't agree with what's happening and you really want to send a strong message, which also implies that you're kind of like putting on your shoulders the burden of your community.
Right. And even the burden of the community overseas, yes, and on the other, yeah, side of the world. Yeah,
this is what struck me. Mm-hmm. I mean, he didn't do it. So classic forms of martyrdom. Mm-hmm. Look at martyrdom as an act of defense of mm-hmm. the faith, and it's something like there is an authority which prohibits you to profess your faith. Mm-hmm. And so you defend it mm-hmm. Until you die. I mean, until mm-hmm. this authority kills you in mm-hmm. a way.
Yeah.
This is totally different. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was doing it as an act of defense of his religious beliefs. So mm-hmm. in a way, the beliefs of his community, but also in defense of a community or mm-hmm. a population that was abroad, the Vietnamese mm-hmm. people.
Right.
So I think this brings us to think that the 20th century was a very was the moment of a shift towards mm-hmm. new forms of martyrdom,
mm-hmm.
and so we cannot use traditional mm-hmm. definitions of right. martyrdom anymore. Right.
Yeah. Do you see this as this is a bit of a leading question, mm-hmm. but do you see a development of global consciousness as one of the
yeah,
ways in which this
I
changes?
Think that surely the idea that the United States were acting in the global context
mm-hmm.
was part of it.
Right.
I mean, like, yeah, I know that using globalization as a concept mm-hmm. is, you know, there's a lot of meanings.
Yes.
But of course, the landscape of LaPorte was not just New York.
Exactly. Yeah.
He was able to see outside the city mm-hmm. and actually on the other side of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that, and actually I think that the most important element in this change of view are the media.
Mm-hmm.
We have images of the Bonds immolating himself in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
He called the journals and said he was going to do that. So, photographers and reporters mm-hmm. could go to the square where right. he was going to self-immolate.
Right.
The point is, we don't have any image of LaPorte's act
right.
because he didn't say that.
Mm-hmm.
We only have an image of what he left on the ground when he was brought to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that part of the not resounding way mm-hmm. LaPorte's act was treated is because we don't have images
right.
of what happened. So right. people do. We have so when the American population started reacting against the Vietnam War, it was because they had images of what was happening mm-hmm. in Vietnam
mm-hmm.
and how the napalm would kill people,
mm-hmm.
how the army was acting. So in a way, the images would like bring to their face
mm-hmm.
very in a very strong way
mm-hmm.
What was happening. So I think that the media
mm-hmm.
really were really had a very large part
mm-hmm.
of like the way people awakened.
Mm-hmm. Right, and started relating to the people that
yes.
they were also
yeah.
at war.
So
against.
Yeah, they would go globally. They
yeah.
would go globally because
mm-hmm.
they had images coming from
mm-hmm.
outside the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think yeah, the media were the main.
So on the one hand, you have the development of the concept of conscience within Catholic theology.
Yeah.
And you have the media and other forms of, well, what we can say with disclaimers,
mm-hmm.
Globalization
yes.
processes, basically bringing the war far away closer, expanding
yes.
the global consciousness, and in that way kind of expanding a religious global conscience, perhaps.
Yeah.
Would you say that?
I think that what
Is
we
that
can
taking
say...
Too far?
I think, yeah, we're going too far,
mm-hmm.
but to some extent, I mean, LaPorte used a means of protest that was not part of his tradition.
Mm-hmm.
That was part of, actually, that it wasn't neither part of the Buddhist tradition in
mm-hmm.
a way,
mm-hmm.
but, I mean, he took this Buddhist mm-hmm. means of protest mm-hmm. and brought it into Catholicism, mm-hmm. Which I think it's very interesting. I mm-hmm. mean,
absolutely.
Yeah. So in a way, this we're going too far, but globalization mm-hmm. brought to a global religious landscape. Mm-hmm. And so that means that religion's kind of like, it's hard
in sort of start
not mixing, but well, at least
trying out each other's.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say religions, but in mm-hmm. religious individuals would start experimenting
mm-hmm. right.
way of mixing, mm-hmm. you know, the traditions, mm-hmm. and that's you know that. Then we have the mm-hmm. new age waves, and yeah. you know, so it's kind of like,
yeah.
I think yeah. that we can say that, like with disclaimers,
yes, yes, with disclaimers. Okay, so, with regards then to suicide versus martyrdom, mm-hmm. You know, there are ways that, you know, suicide has been characterized as a sin and has been treated yes. as a sin in Catholic teaching, Catholic doctrine.
Yeah, it still is.
Yeah. And precisely so, on the other hand, you have martyrdom that is such a great ideal and, you know, such as, you know, people who are interpreted as martyrs in the Catholic tradition are... you know, more quickly beatified and made to be blessed, which to our readers or sorry, listeners, would be sort of not a complete saint, but almost a saint.
Yeah, going yeah. towards that.
Yeah,
way.
Going yeah. towards. Yeah. And so there's this big contrast in attitude towards one or the other. So what the hierarchy kind of chooses to interpret it as?
Well, actually, I'm not a theologian, so it's kind of like I'm not sure about what mm-hmm. I'm saying, but the martyrdom is an act of defense of your faith, mm-hmm. and it has to be clearly that way. I mm-hmm. mean, that's the reason why I think Laporte's act was mm-hmm. martyrdom.
Right.
He didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. It was not desperate, mm-hmm. as long as we know.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it was not desperate for our categories of desperation. Mm-hmm. Right. You know what I mean? It's like, he was very young and he mm-hmm. was living this kind of like explosion of happening. Mm-hmm. So he might be disoriented, but mm-hmm. I don't think that it was so disorienting that he would commit suicide.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he said, as historians, we have to take his words very seriously. Mm-hmm. So if he said that was a religious act, we have to consider it as a religious act.
Right.
As we do with fundamentalist terrorism mm-hmm. or, you know,
exactly.
we consider it as a religious yeah. act. And so, and it's important. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a real political act mm-hmm. to consider it as a religious act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we cannot think of people committing acts of martyrdom just as crazy people.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the way to go over.
Right. It leads us nowhere.
It leads us nowhere. So I think, there's a definition of martyrdom that mm-hmm. I like. And it was written by the theologian Karl Rahner, a mm-hmm. Catholic theologian, in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that a martyrdom is someone who dies while fighting actively for the demands of his or her Christian convictions.
Mm-hmm.
So we can, I think that this is enough. I mm-hmm. mean, to let us include
mm-hmm.
The 20th century martyrs.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, martyrdom in the 20th century started with hunger strikes.
Right.
So hunger strikes bring you to die mm-hmm. to death because mm-hmm. you don't, yeah, of course right. you don't eat anymore. Yeah. and so we can consider it suicide too. Mm-hmm. But the reason why we don't consider it suicide is because we know that the people striking had religious mm-hmm. conviction. I mean, had religious.
Yeah, and it says also something about the connotations and associations that we make to the word suicide.
Exactly.
It's very negatively laden in many ways. It's a very loaded term.
I think that so now there is a new current of scholarship
mm-hmm.
that is trying to analyze and to think of martyrdom mm-hmm. In the different religions, mm-hmm. so not just Catholicism, mm-hmm. Christianity and Catholicism, but in the different religions and how we can understand better what's happening in mm-hmm. 2015
yeah, writing that. Exactly yeah. on a comparative level
exactly
mm-hmm. right. Well, I think you wrapped that up very nicely. I think we'll have to stop for now.
Okay.
But thank you so much for participating in the Religious
Thank
Studies
you.
Project.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad that you're developing this project, the Religious Studies Project. So thank you.
Thank you.
Really interesting interview there. Great to hear Jana stepping behind the microphone for a turn.
Yeah.
That was great to hear. And hopefully we'll hear more from her. Next week, we've got another new interviewer.
We do. Anya Pogacnik, who's here at the University of Edinburgh. And she is very, very capable individual doing lots of good work. And stepped up a few weeks ago to interview Professor Stephen Bergfitz. And it ties in, well, you know, that was on martyrdom and self-immolation. When people think of self-immolation, they think of Buddhist monks. So we're on to Sri Lankan Buddhism next week, but it's not quite as simple as that.
Well, yeah, it's more a Buddhism and colonialism using Sri Lankan Buddhism as a case study and, about how, colonial powers interpreted Buddhism and the negotiations between them and then how that colonial legacy continues to the modern day. Great. Was very happy to add Anya to our pool of interviewers. So very much looking forward to the first fruits of that next week.
On Thursday, we should have a response to this week's interview from Paul Garreau, who's an excellent chap who I met when I was over in Ottawa in November 2012. I've been itching to get him involved, and I saw the word Catholic in the title of an interview, and I went, Paul. So thank you, Paul. You're helping us out with that, and I hope we got you the interview in time. If it doesn't come out, it is not Paul's fault, and let's put it that way. It might be ours, but it should. You will receive that response.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say ours, I don't mean Kevin's. I mean literally
yeah,
mine. do you want to say any of the closing details there, David?
Sure. I mean, I was trying to think of some exciting news, or we don't really have any.
No. Bizarrely, university semester has finished.
Yeah. What I'm going to do is I'm going to draw back the curtain a little bit behind the scenes of the RSP.
Yeah.
Reveal the fact that this is, you know, back in the early days, we would quite often record these in the pub, but it's 9:30. On a Wednesday morning, it's raining outside, and we're both exhausted. I've got 90 exam scripts over there to do. Chris has got 3 things that are overdue and a class to teach tonight.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're trying to keep the energy levels up.
Woo!
Yeah. So, this first semester is always a trial.
Yeah.
But, we hope that we're getting you through your morning as you know, listening to the RSP whilst you're
kicking back, no more teaching to do, no more undergrad student, or probably similarly exhausted.
Or doing your ironing or whatever it is you do.
We look forward to the Hessian days of the sort of September to December podcast.
Yes, indeed. But post-conferences when we've got a pile of recordings. Yeah.
And nothing much to do.
Yeah. Who can wait for that? Talking of which, we will be having our summer break coming up June, July and August, as we always do, to give you a chance to catch up.
During July and August, not June, July and August.
Yes, did I?
It might have sounded to the uninitiated listener.
It's just my sleepy voice.
That's yeah.
So we have yet to firm up, but we've got a few ideas. We've got some series that we're hoping to bring you during that break, not of podcasts, but of other material, which we've been excited to. We've been working on behind the scenes. Let's put it that way. I won't say too much.
Yeah, working
as yet, but. But that's looking like it's going to be an interesting break as well. However, the BASR are our supporters as ever, and you can support us too by using our Amazon links.
And using Facebook. And using
Twitter.
And if you want,
Google Plus.
Also,
is there any more?
iTunes.
Oh, iTunes, yes. Yeah. And if you do, do leave us a rating because that'll help. A lot.
Yeah, we should stop saying that, really, because no one does. Yeah, thanks for...
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Mm.